you could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. And we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Joining us this evening, friend of the show, family, Lamar Gafford, TownTalk.com. How you doing today, my man?
Man, I'm good.
Doing good, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, game two of the NBA Finals is in the books. Warriors win 107-88. Steph Curry led all scorers with 29 points, 5 for 12 from the three-point line. Jordan Poole gave him 17 off the bench, 5 from 9 from beyond the arc. So, Lamar, what are your first thoughts, God's honest reaction to game two?
I think it was a game here where Golden State wanted to come out there with a statement, especially in the third quarter and the second half all the way through. They wanted to show here that they could finish out the ball game, something they did not do in game one. And they wanted to go ahead and try to see if they could even up this series. I felt like this was going to happen, honestly. I mean, we kind of said that in our game one recap where we felt like Golden State was going to at least take game two. And I think it pretty much held serve there. Now, so I still think it's going to be a pretty long series. This game doesn't sway my opinion at all, but I still think we're in for a 6-7 game series.
Absolutely. The biggest thing that stuck out to me in game number two was in game one, Horford, Smart, and Derek White were huge for the Celtics, while Jason Tatum didn't play so well, right? So Jason Tatum was 3-17 from the field, and Horford, Smart, and Derek White, Horford was 6-8 from the three-point line. Marcus Smart was 5-8 from the three-point line. Derek White was 5-8 from the three-point line, right? Tonight, in tonight's game, and my biggest question was going into game two and for the rest of the series was, were Horford, Smart, and White and some of the other players going to be able to replicate that type of performance and that type of output, right? Al Horford tonight, 2 points. Marcus Smart tonight, 2 points on 1-6 from the field. Derek White, 4-13 from the field, 12 points. And my other second thought is, in terms of the Celtics, how can Boston realistically, right? If they're going to win this series, they, in the first two games, they've gotten down double digits both times, right? And Golden State isn't playing at full capacity, isn't playing at full go because Klay Thompson isn't the Klay Thompson that we've seen previously. Klay Thompson, 4-19 tonight, 6-14 in game one. So, Lamar, just a quick question for you. If Golden State is going to win this and Klay Thompson isn't what Klay Thompson used to be, are they going to have to just have Jordan Poole replicate what Klay Thompson used to give them?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and you saw how it was in game one. Poole had a bad night. They lost game one. You know, had he made some of those shots there, especially in the fourth quarter, who knows? They don't, you know, give up that big lead. They don't have that sizable disadvantage that they had in the fourth quarter where it just seemed like they couldn't hit a pebble, couldn't throw a pebble into the ocean at that point. But as you can see in game two, Poole got hot, and then next thing you know, the Warriors were able to keep the momentum going. So I think having Jordan Poole out there, because look at this. I mean, I think that this, even though Klay Thompson still has had spurts of showing the old Klay Thompson, especially in game five of the Western Conference Finals, where he had an incredible shooting night. I think he scored 32 points in that closeout game there. This is a guy that still hasn't played in 2 years. I mean, played in playoff basketball in 2 years. So to expect a lot out of him that quickly, that's kind of still saying a little bit. Now, like I say, I still think that Klay Thompson still a deadly shooter, still is one of the best shooters, that in the history of basketball there. But to have a guy like Jordan Poole step up whenever Klay is not doing pretty well, I mean, that's a big thing.
Absolutely. And for me, with Boston, with the series shifting back to Boston, the role players, right? So guys like Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, Al Horford, they're going to play better at home, right? So I don't think we're going to have another game of Al Horford giving them 2 points, Marcus Smart giving them 2 points, right? I don't think we're going to have that. I think we're going to play with a lot more energy. But I also think this is where Golden State's experience really helps them, right? Because they've been here 6 times already. And we knew coming in the game too, the Golden State, it just felt like there was no way they were going to let themselves go down 0-2 going back to Boston. So I still think this series is going to go 7 games. I still think Golden State's going to come out winning this one. But, you know, Golden State, I just have a few causes for concern. Klay Thompson is the biggest one because, like you said, he really hasn't played a whole lot of basketball in 2 years. And I think given what we saw and the heights that the Warriors reached during their peak, there was a period of time when Klay Thompson and Steph Curry took a 3-point shot. We're like, there's no way that's not going in. Like, you were shocked when they missed. Now, watching Klay, you're kind of like, oh, that actually went in, right? And that's an odd thing to say about Klay Thompson, you know? So what can they get out of Klay Thompson? To me, that is like the biggest thing. And to move on, given that Gary Payton II is back from injury, what do you think he gives Golden State on the defensive end?
Pretty much a lot. I mean, this is one of your better defenders, I mean, that they have. And, you know, it didn't show up a whole lot in the stat sheet, you know, with him having just only 7 points and 3 rebounds and 3 assists. But he still played 25 minutes. When he was out there, he was pretty much one of their best effective bench players. I mean, he had a plus minus of plus 15. So, you know, he was able to do a lot of the things defensively, give you good energy, give you, just the little intangibles there. And that really helps out the Warriors there and kind of gave him a shot in the arm because he didn't play in game one at all, even though he was available. So I think him being back there, also being pretty much a data for the Bay too. I mean, that kind of helps out a little bit as well. You know, you feel getting that energy back there. And I think this presence was a big thing out there that really helped out the Warriors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of like another guy who me and you have talked about this for years, the guy being one of the biggest disappointments in NBA history, Andrew Wiggins, right? Mm-hmm. And it is odd that a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who might be one, like just, is a singularly talented athlete, right? And it is wild to think about that having to put Andrew Wiggins as a fourth or fifth option. Now, all of a sudden, he's starting to blossom into, you know, a extremely well-rounded basketball player because during his time in Minnesota, what he was great at was just scoring. That was it. He got buckets, and he got buckets for him and nobody else. So could you talk about how Andrew Wiggins has progressed over the past handful of years since he's been in Golden State?
Well, just getting the chance to play at in a winning culture. I mean, I think that's a big thing too. Let's not forget about this year too. Before he even came in there, you know, this is a team that just came into five straight finals. So getting in that winning culture, learning some of the things here from Klay, from Steph, from Draymond Green, also being that fourth option there, that also kind of helps them out a little bit too, where, okay, that takes some of that pressure where, all right, well, I don't have to be the number one guy. I don't have to be the number two guy. It's not all on me to do this here. If Steph is not having a good night or Jordan Poole's not having a good night or Klay's not having a good night, all right, it's on me, but it's not too much pressure on me to have to be this 20, 25 point scorer. I can get 15 points and I can still affect the team in winning in some type of way. If I get 20 or 25, that's an added bonus for me or something like that. So I think that's a big thing there. Is it kind of disappointing that he never really panned out as the superstar that everybody projected him to be after the 2014 draft? Yeah, it is a little disappointing and everything, but for him to, I wouldn't want to say coming out party or anything else like that, but for him to really do this in this stage and to show the world that I am a capable player that can contribute to a winning team, I think that says a lot.
And I think that was like the biggest knock on him, and it's still the knock on Karl Anthony Towns, was that, yeah, they're good players, but you ain't never gonna win nothing, right? And I think that's the big knock I have on like a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. Like, think about it. Minnesota, since they traded Kevin Garnett in the summer of 2007, they've made the playoffs and they've had a winning record twice. The year Jimmy Butler was there, and after a year, Jimmy Butler was like, to hell with you people, and he showed up to the job, cussed Karl Anthony Towns out, cussed Andrew Wiggins out, he cussed Tom Thibodeau out, then he went out there to practice and ran with the third string and busted their asses in a scrimmage and then said, F this job, I quit. Like, he treated it like everybody wanted to show up to their job and quit at McDonald's. That's smooth how he did it. So Jimmy Butler was up out of there, right? And then this past year, they have had two winning seasons, Lamar, since I was in the sixth grade. Two. So seeing Andrew Wiggins progress in this way, it's extremely, you know, in some ways it's gratifying, but in some ways it's almost like you shouldn't have to become the fourth or fifth option to become capable, right? To reach your full potential, if that makes any sense. So moving on to the Celtics side of things. Jason Tatum played a lot better tonight, 8 of 19 from the field, 6 of 9 from the three-point line, 28 points. So what do you think Boston did offensively to get him going?
I think just give him millions of shots. It's kind of like what we were talking about. They wanted to give him, get him going, get it to him in his spots, get it to him, you know, just get him in a rhythm. Because it looked like in the first half, and especially in the first quarter, he was in a good rhythm. He was making almost every single three-point shot that was out there. I think he had about 5 in the first half alone. About 5. He ended up with 6. So seeing him getting that rhythm, that was a good thing. Unfortunately, he was not able to sustain that because the others weren't really performing to what they did in game one. The other thing I would also like to see, too, is Jaylen Brown kind of become a little bit more efficient, because in game one, he wasn't really efficient. And in game two, he wasn't really efficient. 17 points, 17 shots. You know, I would like for him to shoot the ball a little bit better. Maybe that might help out a little bit more when he gets to Boston. Him being that consistent number two and him being more efficient as a number two, I think will take also the load off of Tatum there. We all know Tatum is going to go off no matter what happens. We've seen the Eastern Conference Finals. We've seen the second round where he did that, went toe-to-toe against Jimmy, went toe-to-toe against Giannis. We all know that he's capable of doing that. But you got to also have somebody else that also do that too, or you're going to wind up in like Dwight Howard in the first round of the 2011 playoffs, where it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm getting 40 points. I'm getting 40 and 20, but everybody else is not doing anything because they just be like, all right, we're going to let you dominate. But everybody else, you know, if they're not getting involved, all right, they're going to get bored.
Baby, tell me what you mad for. I give you everything. I'm always on the road working, but you my everything. It's been some years now and you don't understand me yet. I'm about to bet some corners. I guess it's time to go on separate.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to move to some of the fan questions here we have on the live stream on YouTube. Again, we appreciate you guys for hanging out with us. So, question from my main man, Stone. Did Steve Kerr make the proper adjustments? Or did Boston supporting cast just have an off night? Lamar, I'll throw this one to you first.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, Boston's supporting cast did have a bad night. I mean, like you mentioned earlier here, most of those guys were 2 points, and that kind of struggled. But again, you know, that is kind of to be expected from the supporting cast when you're on the road. Role players really don't perform that well on the road, is what Charles Barkley has always said for a long time. But I do think that he did make the proper adjustments too. Like you said, getting Gary Payton in there, that's also a big thing right there. Cool shooting better, that's another big thing there. And we all know Steve Kerr, you know, he's been in these situations before where after a loss, he can kind of know what buttons to push a little bit in order to get them going.
Absolutely. So for me to answer that question, I think Lamar and the folks who are listening and watching at home, can I go with a little bit of both? Can I go with that? because I do think Boston's supporting cast definitely had an off night. Like, much in the same way that in game one, when you have Horford, Smart, and Derek White shooting the lights out the way that they did, right? Like, that's an aberration. Like, Al Horford being 6-for-8 from the three-point line. If Al Horford is 6-for-8 from the three-point line, damn it, we lost. All right, we'll live with that. That's like, I don't know if you remember in the 2017 semis when San Antonio played Oklahoma City. And in game six, Tim Duncan's last game in Oklahoma City, Andre Roberson shot 7-for-9 from the three-point line. If Andre Roberson making threes, we lost, right? If Al Horford making threes, same, like six or seven of them, we lost. You know what I mean? But that's not something you can like count on night in, night out. So, and a night like tonight where Marcus Smart just has 2 points or Al Horford just has 2 points, I don't think a night like tonight you can also like count on as well. I think in game, as the series goes along, we're going to see the role players from both teams start to regress back towards the median, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you said, it's just one role player, you know, have this ridiculous game or anything else like that. I mean, it's bound to happen. But generally, the playoffs are all about the big-time players. They always step up in big-time moments and all that stuff. So I'm interested in seeing what Game 3 comes all about in Boston. How do some of those other guys, how do they perform pretty well? Will they step up to this moment and all that stuff? I'm really interested in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm reading a few more comments from our folks on the live stream. So someone asked, if Andrew Wiggins was a bust, what does that make Anthony Bennett? Anthony Bennett is the biggest waste of space in the history of the NBA. Anthony Bennett is probably right now working at Taco Bell or working as a real estate consultant. I hope he's doing anything else but play basketball. Maybe he finished his degree. I don't know. I hope he did something, though. As long as his ass is not in a shirt, in some shorts, in some sneakers, with a basketball. I don't care what Anthony Bennett does. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is kind of very tough there. And by the way, I just pulled it up here. Anthony Bennett is in the... he's still playing ball. He's still playing ball.
He's playing ball in Antarctica or something?
he's playing ball for the P League.
What the hell is that? Taiwan.
Yes, it's in Taiwan.
Now look, this is like anytime you got to go play in Taiwan, this is like playing like Division III at NAIA football. I don't want to crush nobody's dreams who might be listening or watching out there. If you play D3 football or NAIA football or something, or you have family that did, this ain't really about you. Well, it's kind of about them. But just go to school and get your degree. Ball is not always life, okay? This is like when you, like, you, everybody got a cousin that's like 31 or 32 still trying to get their rap career off the ground. Mm-hmm. That's what going to play basketball in Taiwan is, okay? Straight like that.
His stats for this season, well, he was playing in Israel, actually. He played 8 games, started 1. He averaged 6.3 points. So, yeah, he's still kind of hanging it there by a thread. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, just Anthony Bennett was kind of one of the worst players of all time. Super duper bust. I mean, probably the biggest bust in NBA history. And, you know, I think it's also, you know, we kind of mentioned a little bit about those Timberwolves teams earlier. You know, with them making it to the playoffs, the only time they made it to the playoffs was when they had a grown up on the team, Jimmy and now really Patrick Beverly and all that stuff. So that also kind of helps a little bit there as far as, Andrew Wiggins, you know, seeing his development right now with the Warriors. There's at least some grown-ups on the team there. And that's kind of, they're holding them accountable there, where in the past, really weren't there too many grown-ups out there.
Absolutely. So we got another question here. Do you think any of the players will fight in this series? I need some more drama. Man, we ain't had a good NBA fight in at least, I think since Nuggets, Knicks in the Garden, where Carmelo Anthony clocked Marty Collins and then ran away. That's it. We ain't had a good fight since. Like, well, okay, Chris Paul and Rajon Rondo. But, you know, that wasn't even but so much foolishness. Like, I want, you know, I think, do people want a Royal Rumble? You know what I mean? But do I think they're going to fight? No, Draymond Green is going to bother some people. Draymond Green is going to flail his arms. I'm just glad Draymond Green stopped kicking people in the kids. Honestly. That's what I'm glad about. And a side note, you said Anthony Bennett might be the worst number one overall pick in history. I think that title belongs to Kwame Brown, but let me not talk too much about Kwame Brown because Kwame Brown might be listening. And by the time this stream is over, about a morning, Kwame Brown didn't probably made like 10 to 15 YouTube videos from his pickup truck.
Yeah, that is true. As far as fights in the series, I feel like game four, maybe we'll have a Draymond fight. It seemed like in game two, Draymond was trying to bait. After he got that first technical foul, he knew that more than likely they were going to give him a lot of rope and try to not throw him out. So I bet you he was like, well, you know what? If I'm going to get thrown out, I'm going to try to sucker somebody else to get thrown out as well. So it might be between him and Grant Lee.
What do you think he said to Jaylen Brown this entire time? Because I know what I would say to Jaylen Brown to get under his skin. I know exactly what I said.
What would you say?
Cut them braids off, man. Cut the braids. Like, he's walking out here with them Nick Cannon braids, man. He has no hang time. Him and Drake just out here embarrassing themselves.
Yeah.
Embarrassing themselves. Like, just do the flat top or anything but the braids, man. Anything but the braids.
Yeah, I think he probably is saying that to him. He's probably just talking all types of trash to him. All types of trash to him. I don't think he's doing that to Tatum, but I'm thinking he's doing that to Brown at least.
All right. So we actually got our main man, Kennedy Miller, is actually going to hop on, join us right now. But Lamar, we have another question. Somebody asked, what are our thoughts on a Utah Jazz situation?
Ooh, man. Oh, boy. So this is very spicy. And for those of y'all that don't realize, Quinn Snyder is no longer the head coach up there. Of course, we all know that they've been beefing. It's been reports about Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert not being able to get along with each other, even though they say they can get along with each other. Interesting situation. I mean, I think we might be seeing the end of the Jazz as we may know it, honestly, because I just think that there's just been so much smoke and it's been like that for the last 2 years.
Two or three. And I think with the issues they have, Gobert and Mitchell have, somebody's going to end up having to go. Like, for some reason, Rudy Gobert wants the ball. So, you know, and Donovan Mitchell, one thing he's going to do is monopolize the ball. And the biggest issue, like, organizationally comes up when you see a coach leave a team, a good, young, talented team. Like, last year when Rick Carlisle left Dallas and Luka Doncic, you got to ask yourself the question, why on earth would he leave a team with a generational talent like Luka Doncic, right? There must be a whole lot of stuff going on, you know, behind the scenes, behind closed doors, organizationally, that's a mess, right? So, same thing applies in Utah. And at this point, they just going to have to trade Donovan Mitchell. Like, that's just what they're going to have to do. And if I'm Donovan Mitchell, I might be thanking God Quinn Snyder's gone. Because now this means I can be young, black, in my 20s, and not in damn Utah. Because, dog, like, Lamar, and I think some of the listeners that are watching this right now, they can think of how many places are there in the league better than Utah?
Whew. I think the big question would be how many places in the league are worse than Utah?
Oh, man.
I think that's the better question.
How many are worse? I got one. What it might be, what and what? Oklahoma City. Maybe Oklahoma City. Maybe. Maybe OKC. Maybe. But, Ken.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Is this it for the Jazz? Are the Jazz donezo?
I think they are. I think kind of the writing's been on the wall. If you were really being objective about it, they're not truly a championship contender. They're a team that is going to bring their core back a lot of years. But at the same time, you look at this core and you're like, can you win a championship with this core? And I don't think so. You have a good young player in Donovan Mitchell. You have a guy that's won, is it three defensive players, defensive player of the years in Rudy Gobert. But when I think of the top players in the NBA, he gets played off the floor by at least three of those guys. He can't play on the floor with Steph Curry. You know, when James Harden was in his prime, respectfully, he can't play on the floor against them. And, you know, when Anthony Davis plays at the five, he can't play on the floor against those guys. And so I think, you know, his value is diminished when they talk about, you know, his defensive impact. And then, you know, you look at what the Clippers did to him last year. He basically was guarding Terrence Mann, and Terrence Mann had 39 points. And so, I think they've reached their ceiling. And with the city being in Utah, I don't think that they're going to attract many free agents. So you might as well blow it up, get as many picks as you want, and then hope that you can get a draft day steal, or you can, you know, get a pick of a team that isn't expected to fall that low and be that. Because, you know, as good as Donovan Mitchell has been, and like I said, with the combo of him and Rudy Gobert, you know, that gets you to the second round at best. And, well, I would say at best, you get to the Western Conference Finals, based on injuries, or you get the right matchups, you get the right side of the bracket, but you're never going to get to the finals with this roster, and you're never going to get that prize free agent that gets you over the top.
And so we've got another question in the chat. If they move the Utah Jazz, what city or state would I choose? We going to Vegas, baby. If I'm just talking about a place I would like to be young, black, and in my 20s, Las Vegas. Now I might lose all my money at the casinos. Right. And, you know, my mom ain't listening, I don't think. So I can, you know, I can say this, you know, is the right word cabaret? Like, is that the right word, or, you know?
Well, my thing was, it was never a smart idea for Utah to be moved from New Orleans and still have the mascot of the Jazz. So that just doesn't make sense in Utah.
Just move them to Vegas. Move them to Vegas, and they're going to have free agents lining up.
I think Vegas or Seattle needs to have a team. And I know NBA ownership doesn't want to have a team in Vegas, but, you know, Seattle needs to have a team. You know, you look at the pipeline of guys that have come out of Seattle. You look at the fans that were in Seattle when, you know, they had a franchise. Like, they need a team out there, to kind of validate that fanship out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have another fan question. So, what are the biggest adjustments Boston needs to make in order to take game number three? Ken, we'll start with you.
You know, I think, you know, that in game three, they're going to be at home. So the role players are going to play better. But I think there needs to be some sort of consistency, right, throughout this series. If they want to have a chance to win, you got to win 4 out of 7, right? But you can't have Al Horford going 26 and then 2. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be somewhere in between. And, like, I figured that Golden State was going to win big tonight. But if you are truly a championship team, you can't have these ebbs and flows. You can't look like world beaters one day and hold Golden State scoreless for 5 minutes, and then you get blown out by 30. You know, you're going to have to figure out, where is the median in between this? Like, our star guys are going to have to be star guys. Our role players are going to have to show up. And at the same time, on the other end, like, we know that Golden State is a championship team. So we're going to have to, understand that they're going to have momentum. They're going to make their runs. But if we feel that we're truly ready for this moment, we're going to have to withstand those runs and still be able to, give our punch back. And I don't think tonight that they did that. Once they got that punch from Golden State, they kind of like laid down.
And it was another one of them, like, patented Golden State third quarters. Like,
yep.
During, I hate saying, like, during the peak run of Golden State, because that was just like 3 years ago.
But we've seen this for 7 years now.
Man, because you think, even as some of the other ancillary pieces around Steph, Draymond, and Klay have changed, they, in the third quarter, I don't know whether it's just conditioning or what, they come out in the third quarter and they just blow people's doors off. Like, they can go from being down 15 to up 7, And then yeah. as the fourth quarter starts, all of a sudden you look up again and they're up 22.
Yeah.
All right, Lamar. So what adjustments do you think Boston needs to make to take game number three?
I think attack more inside. I mean, they've been doing such a good job from beyond the arc in these last two, in these two games. Obviously in game one, they shot much better from three. Game two, a little bit colder, but still all right. But I think maybe attack, inside a little bit more. Exploit that weakness that Golden State really has out there, because I mean, they're still trotting out there, Kevon Looney and all that, and all that. Boston has a much better, inside game where they could go with Horford. If they could get Grant Williams inside maybe a little bit, and shoot, even Robert Williams. I mean, I know he's more of a defensive guy, but if they can get him going, and kind of like the same way that Looney got going in game two, I think that's going to be a big thing for them. Just something to kind of take a little bit off of. Okay, we don't have to live by the three or die by the three, but just get some easy shots, get some shots inside the paint, maybe get some free throws going in there. I think those are some of the things that they can really work on there.
Absolutely, absolutely. If there are no other fan questions here, we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast special post-game edition. Lamar Gaffney, I gotta thank you for hanging out. Once again, Lamar, let the folks know where they can find all your work, everything you're doing out in Central Louisiana covering high school sports.
Yes, sir. You can find me on Twitter at Lamar Gafford. That's all in one word, at Lamar Gafford. I've just been pumping up some articles about some of the high school sports around here, getting some top five lists going on. We're about to have some receivers and offensive linemen, so that's going to be some fun times this weekend.
All right, all right. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can the folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, that's _KennedyMiller_. Shout out to Dr. Ron Goodwin. I saw him today at 7:30 service. He gave me a talk about trying to get my PhD.
Dog. Hold on. You went to 7:30 service?
Dog. I went to 7:30 service. I arrived at 8:30, by the way.
See, that's what you do. This is what your parents do when you come home and you've been out the night before, you had a couple drinks, and they drag you to 7:30 service to make a point. You was out until 2, 3, 4 in the morning. You can show up to church for the Lord.
Shout out to Ron Goodwin and Robert Lane trying to convince me to get my PhD after I just got my master's.
Don't look. But, what's that sign? But what did old boy hold up in Madea Goes to Jail? Joe, don't do it. Don't do it. She got three kids. Don't do it.
Shout out to those guys. But, yeah, my apologies for arriving on here kind of tardy. I got caught at a comedy show. I was trying to watch a game somewhere and I got caught at a comedy show. And, you know, when you try and get up in them, oh, where y'all going? Where y'all going?
That's how you end up being a part of the show. Right there.
And I ended up being a part of the show. Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate you guys for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday. Give you guys some more good content.
And we hopefully will have Coach Troy with us on Wednesday. And if you've not listened and met Coach Troy, this is going to be good. But you guys can follow me on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. That's T as in Tangeray, S as in Sangria, M as in Margaritas. Follow the show on Instagram. At _TheGamePlanPodcast. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we greatly appreciate you guys for listening. This has been the Game Plan Podcast. We're going to see you guys next time.